Now, today we think well of our mothers, and we're celebrating all the things they did right, and we are grateful. But there are some things a mother cannot do, and that's what I want to speak about this Mother's Day. Psalm 139. This is a psalm that's all about mothers and kids, and a God who knew them, knows them, loves them, loved them. One who made them and plans for them. And seeing we are all here either as a mother or some mother's kid, we're all involved in the talk. And so I trust that what God has to say will be a blessing to you. Let's read a little of the psalm, beginning at verse 1. O Lord, you've searched me. You know when I sit, you know when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out, my lying down. You're familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely, O Lord. Down to verse 14, 13. You created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame wasn't hidden from you. When I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth, your eyes saw my unformed body, and all the days ordained for me are written in your book before one of them came to be. In verse 23, search me, O God, know my heart, test me, know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Now, the first thing a mother cannot do is she cannot produce a perfect child. Maybe you want to take issue with that. I remember Pete, our youngest, going to school and doing a self-analysis quiz, self-image quiz. And over supper that night, he said to us, we had to do this quiz, and I had to say what I liked about myself. So immediately the family was quite interested about what he put. And so I said, Pete, what did you say? He said, well, I just said, everything. Well, his sister and brother waded in and suggested some things they weren't so keen on, and we added our little thing, but I noticed he was grinning. You know, you cannot produce a perfect child, a child that everything is perfect. And why? Because there's never been a perfect mom. Never in the whole history, since Adam and Eve. In fact, let's talk about Eve, because you might say, well, what about Eve? Doesn't it say in Genesis 3:20, she's the mother of all living, yes. And she was a perfect woman for a little while, but she was never a perfect mom, because she became a mother after the fall. And so you can't produce an unfallen kid when you're fallen. It's impossible. It's something a mother cannot do. You remember that God had one rule. Don't eat forbidden fruit. And you can remember they broke it. You see, now, because of what Eve and Adam did, we are like the bowling ball in the game of grass bowling. The big black bowl that has a bias inside it. And no matter how hard you aim it in the direction of the little white jack to try and get it as near as you can, which is what the game is all about, it doesn't work because of the bias, because of the weight off center within the big black bowl. And that's what happened in Eden. God aimed Adam and Eve as straight as he could towards the target of dependence and obedience and faith. And they chose, and they had freedom to do it, not to be obedient, and sin came. And Adam and Eve ate the forbidden fruit, and rot set in, literally. They're not my teeth marks, Mrs. Adam might have protested loudly, dropping the apple. Then whose are they? Inquired the snake, retrieving the forbidden fruit. Look like your little pearlies to me. and has Mr. Perfect's great big choppers on the other side. Perfect couple said nothing. There was no denying their perfect teeth marks in the perfect fruit. "Now all your kids all down history," said the snake, "will have to get their teeth fixed." He was right. There would be no perfect people with perfect bodies anymore. They would have no perfect minds or perfect souls. There would be no perfect world. Mrs. Adam wept bitterly. She couldn't unsin herself. She wasn't God. And then along came the imperfect children. Cain and Abel. You remember what happened there. Cain killed his brother, Abel. We went to the botanical gardens in Johannesburg, and we went to see the South African eagle. It's an incredible bird. It only has two chicks, ever. One egg is laid 4 days before the other one. And on a big picture, just below where the birds were nesting above us, we see the two little chicks in the nest. One is called Cain, and one is called Abel. And apparently, the Cain and Abel syndrome happens every time a chick is born. Cain's born first, has the advantage, Abel is born next, and Cain picks away and attacks that poor little chick and steals its food until it's gone. Two birds in one nest. I read in a little children's book, Children's Letters to God, a child was ruminating on this and said, "Dear God, maybe Cain and Abel wouldn't kill each other so much if they had their own bedrooms." Well, this little Cain and Abel chick had their own bedroom. Didn't help, because creation fell when man fell, as well as the creature, as well as us human beings. We all fell. And even though we were made in the image of God, there is now a broken image. Yet something still is left of the divine genius in the making of human beings. The potter, if you wish, his image is still in the clay. I have some pottery here, made by two of our children. We have three children, David, Judy, and Peter. And I don't know where Judy's pottery is. I think she was doing it on the computer or something. But this is the pottery belonging to our two boys, David and Peter. Now, those of you listening by radio won't be able to get this illustration. I'll have to talk it out for you. But those of you that know our children will know who made each pot. Who made this one? Peter, right. How do we know? It's got a great big nose growing about a foot out of it. It's zany, it's funny, because Pete is zany and funny. This is David's pot. It's tidy, it's meticulous. It's just like David. He used to fold up his dirty underwear so I could collect it. He is the tidiest child I have ever known in my life. And this pot is tidy because, you see, the image of the potter is in the clay. There is something of the person in those things that he makes. And so it is even now. Even though we're marred, even though we are born to die, and we are all terminal the day of our death, even though all of that, Eve said, "With the help of the Lord, I brought forth a child." And God is still involved in bringing forth children. What divinity does with dust defies description, even though it's a broken image. I asked my gynecologist to give me one example, and she talked about the wonders and miracle of conception. For the male, if we compare what a sperm must do to fertilize an egg, an athlete would have to run at 70 miles an hour for 320 miles. Poor little thing. If we look at the female, and you think of our fallopian tubes, if you wish, The same hairs that carry the egg down somehow know how to reverse and carry the sperm up. The image of the potter is in the pot. And then somebody might say, then how come God, the perfect God, would want to be involved in producing imperfect people? Why didn't he just, if he was the potter, scrunch us all up and be done with us and make another world and another people somewhere else? Because, you see, he is still in the remaking process, and mothers can't do anything about that. But God can. God can. He's not finished with us yet. I love little Danny Dutton's, age 8, from Chula Vista's comment. One of God's main jobs is making people. He makes them to replace the ones that die, so there'll be enough people to take care of things on earth. He doesn't make grown-ups, just babies. I think because they're smaller and easier to make. That way, he doesn't have to take his valuable time teaching them to talk and walk. He can just leave that to mothers and fathers. God is still involved in the process from beginning to end. I love the two pictures in this psalm, one of the potter and the clay and the other of tapestry. He's woven me together in my mother's womb. The word is embroidered, a woman's image. He has stitched us incredibly together with something in mind. Every day ordained for us is written in his potter's manual, in his manual on tapestry, if you wish, before one of them came to be. He is the weaver. And we, you and I, are being woven. And he isn't finished. That's why he can still be involved. He is rolling back the effects of the fall. I have a wonderful piece of tapestry here. But you know as well as I do that underneath this finished cover, there are strands and bits of cotton, and it just looks a mess. But you see, God knows what we'll look like in heaven. And this is what he'll do in heaven. He will make us anew. He will complete the tapestry. Somebody wrote on this vein, and I thought it was very moving. They said, God says that defective genetics is not my stitching, but rather the result of the fall. In heaven, I will undo the tangled threads. And you know something? Mothers cannot do that, but God can. And one day, if we take advantage of what he offers us, then you and I will be made like Christ. And we will be made to sin no more. We will never want to sin again. We will be perfect. So that's one thing a mother cannot do. Secondly, a mother cannot clean you up on the inside, verse 24. See, says David, if there's any sinful way in me, and lead me in the way of eternal life. Now, it's soccer season. You and I know that our kids come in and they're head to foot in muck. And we know what to do with that, we mothers, don't we? We clean them up. But we cannot clean them up on the inside. And David, who wrote this psalm, knew all about this. His mother, Mrs. Jesse, well, he talks about her in the psalm. And he talks about Mrs. Jesse in another psalm, in Psalm 51, after he'd really messed up with Bathsheba. He says, in sin did my mother conceive me. Now, that's the old-fashioned way of putting that verse. Makes you wonder what Mrs. Jesse was up to conceiving him in sin. But it doesn't mean that. As you see in your NIV, if you look in Psalm 51, it says, I was a sinner from birth. I was a sinner from birth. That's what it means. The bias. David recognizes that. And he takes ownership for his sin against you. You only have I sinned and done this evil in your sight. And he knew that a mother cannot fix it with God for her child. That's the child's job. That's our job. Our mothers cannot forgive our sin. It's not possible for them to do that. And so mothers or anyone else, we don't need to be responsible for our children's actions. We can certainly warn them about the consequences. We can certainly aim them, and we should, in the right direction. We can certainly say, if you find yourself on the rooftop, get off it. Get off the roof. And we should say that and lay it out for our kids. But we can't make them come down when they see Bathsheba. We can't do that for them. They have to do that all by themselves. Marvelous paraphrase of Psalm 51. David speaking, "You're the one I violated. You've seen it all, seen the full extent of my evil. You have all the facts before you. Whatever you decide about me is fair. I've been out of step with you for a long time, in the wrong since before I was born. What you're after is truth from the inside out. Enter me then. Conceive a new true life in me." Mothers cannot do that for their children, but we can tell them where to get their help. Thirdly, a mother cannot have the same baby twice. "You created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb." One day, Nicodemus, the leader, teacher of the Jews, came to see the Lord Jesus by night. And when they got to talking, Jesus looked at him and said, "You need to be born again." And Nicodemus said, "Can I enter my mother's womb and be born again? Can she have me twice?" And Jesus said, "No. Flesh gives birth to flesh. Spirit gives birth to spirit. That's why I said you need to be born from above." And then Jesus explained why he'd come. He said, "God so loved the world that he sent me here, that if anybody would believe that I can make it right, then they should come to me, because I'm going to die on a cross. And as the serpent was lifted up in the wilderness, when everybody had been bitten by that poison snake stuff, and looked at that picture of the cross in faith, then God healed them and saved them. And just like I'm going to be lifted up above the earth, people that look to me will be saved." And you know, mothers, you can't do that for your child. It doesn't matter what you do to your child. They have to be born again. They need to claim, own, commit, receive at an appropriate time for themselves. So we can't have the same baby twice. We can't rebirth a David and say, "Now don't do it again. This time, get off the roof." We cannot undo what is done. Mothers can't. But God can do something about it. He is the one that brings to regeneration and new birth. A mother cannot always be there for you. Verse 7. David speaking, "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence?" Now, much though I would love to have been omnipresent and play God, and much though I tried, because most mothers do until they fall down exhausted, it's not possible. We cannot always be there for our children because we're not God. We're just mother. I was looking after my daughter's small child, 2 years of age. I couldn't find him, and that panicked me. I'd gone to babysit, and Judy had said, "Just stay on him, just stay on him. Don't let him out of your sight." And so I tried till about 11 o'clock and then collapsed in a heap with a cup of tea, which is what you do if you're English in times of crisis. As I was sipping my cup of tea, I was lulled into this false sense of security, and I realized that Drew had disappeared, and I started frantically looking for him everywhere. Suddenly, I found him doing something he shouldn't have been doing, and I pounced on him and said, "What are you doing, Drew? You naughty boy." Well, he looked at me without any shame or guilt. His eyes got bigger and bigger, and he said, "Yous everywhere, Grandma. Omnipresent Grandma." That's how he saw me. Well, I haven't been able to be everywhere Grandma. But I tell you something, as a child of God, you can look to heaven and say, "Yous everywhere, Father," because he is. And he will be. And he has been. I can't do that, but God can. And when I want to help my child who's messed up, I tell them, God's there for you. It doesn't matter what you've broken that's precious to him. God is there for you. I heard a man tell another story about a two-year-old he was left to look after. He was a grandfather, wonderful pastor. And he was telling the story, and he said, I just turned my back for a minute, and suddenly there was this crash, and I rushed back into the living room, and there was something that was very precious to me, all on the floor in bits. And I was angry with that two-year-old grandson. And he took one look at my face, and he took off out the door, and I took off after him. Well, he realized this was no go, and he couldn't outstrip me. I had longer legs than he did. And so he whirled around, looked at me, and said, Papa, 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 I'm sorry. And that big man said, you know, I just melted. And I picked him up in my arms and I said, it's all right. And in that moment, he said, God said to me, why don't you do that? When you've broken something precious to him, why don't you do that? Because his arms are wide. And he's saying, come on, I'll forgive you. I'm waiting. We can't always do that for our children. Oh, but we can turn them in the right direction and say, run to God, little one. That's the only place you're going to get any help. Do they know that? Have we told them that? We cannot be omnipresent for them all their lives. David had it well in the psalm, didn't he? Where can I go to avoid your spirit? Where can I go to get away from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. You compass my path, my lying down. When I wake, I'm still with you. I remember I used to be frightened of being in the house on my own. And this verse really comforted me. And one that says, God, he that keepeth Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. And in my prayer diary years ago, I wrote, God said to me through that verse, he that keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. There's no point both of us staying awake, Jill. No point both of us staying awake. He stays awake to think about me. He stays awake to look after me. He stays awake to care for me. And I cannot do that for my children. I have to go to sleep. I am not omnipresent. And I am also not omniscient. A mother cannot really understand her child. A mother cannot really understand her child. You know when I sit. You know when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. We cannot read their minds, though we try. We cannot be God. And they learn, don't they, very early on, those little children, to say one thing and think another. Don't you wish you could get inside and just know what it's all about? Well, we can't, but God can. I heard a wonderful story about a little girl who had a dinner party in her house, and her mother said, now, sweetie, why don't you say grace for all these guests? Well, the little girl was a little overwhelmed, and she was shy, and she said, I don't know what to say. And the mother said, well, just say what mother would say. So she said, all right. So they all bowed their heads, and the little girl prayed, Lord, why ever did I ask all these people round for supper? Now then, if the mother had been able to read her child's mind, do you think she would have asked her to pray? I doubt it. And yet, there's never a thought he doesn't know before we think it. There's never a moment we're unknown to God. He cannot unknow us, for he has always known us. He has never had a thought he's never had. And he knows you and I so thoroughly, we are like a glass beehive. Other people see the bees going in and out, the thoughts going in and out of our mind, but they don't know what they do to us inside. God sees us like a glass beehive. He sees the thoughts coming in and out, and he knows what's happening inside. Men merely see us as an opaque beehive. They cannot know. My common and casual acts, my most needful and necessary moments, are noted by thee, and thou knowest the inward thoughts that regulate them. He knows my motives. He knows what choices I'll make before I choose. And he never, ever has me off his mind. We're heavy on his mind. If you want to feel good about yourself, live in Psalm 139. Isaiah 49:16 says, can a mother forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion on the child she has born? Oh, she may. And sometimes, oh, she does. Because we can never have our children on our minds 24, 48 hours. We can't. It's impossible. But God has them there. Can a mother forget? She may, but I will not forget you. I will not forget you. In our fallenness, we as mothers fall down and we forget. But God doesn't. And he knows us best. He knows what's best for us. Every day ordained for us is written in his book before one of them came to be. He has a plan. He has a plan for me and you and our children and our children's children. And it is a good plan. And sometimes it doesn't feel like a good plan, does it? When he withholds, we ask him, Father, I want this. Please give me this. And he says, no. Because I know what's best. I have a plan for you. My daughter was telling me about Stephen, her youngest. And Stephen asked his mother for something he wanted very badly. But it was not in his mother's plan for him. I don't know why. I don't even know what it was that he wanted. But she came up and she was talking to a neighbor and he whispered in her ear, can I have? And Judy just said, no, Stephen, you can't. Not my plan today. Well, he quietly went into the house, and about 5 minutes later, he appeared in his coat and hat, his little knapsack. He was leaving home. Judy was talking to the neighbor, and the neighbor got very concerned as Stephen simply said, I'm leaving, Mother. Turned around, 4 years of age, and walked straight out the door, down the street, Chicago, turned the corner and disappeared. Well, Judy's neighbor said, go after him, Judy, run after him. Oh, she said, he'll be back. Sure enough, he came back. Head straight, knapsack on his back, walks right up to his mother and says, I'm going to give you another chance. Maybe some of us need to give him another chance. What do you ask for? What did he withhold? Why don't you give him another chance? Because he knows you, he loves you, he died for you, he rose for you, he lives for you, he plans for you in love. And he knows what's best. He knows what's best. And lastly, a mother cannot kiss every hurt better. A mother cannot kiss every hurt better. Now, we'd love to, but we're not omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, omni, all present, all knowing, all powerful. And if you've ever had a child and you see them hurting, what do you want to do, mom? However young, however old they are, you want to kiss it better. And a mother cannot kiss every hurt better. Yes, she can kiss some hurts better. But somehow not the big ones. But God can. He can. He can do it better than I could ever do. He loves my children more than I could ever love them. He is able, and the word omnipotence, it means consist, stick together, keep people together inside when everything outside is falling apart. He can do it. He can carry, and he can cradle. And that's what the word means, cradle. He's able to comfort our children when we cannot. He's strong enough to lift them when our strength is gone. Isaiah 66:12-13. As a mother, says God, as a mother comforts Israel, so will I comfort you. The word is cradle. When you see a mother cradling her child, nourishing her child, what a picture. And God uses that picture and says, that's what I'll do for you. Just come to my arms. Come on. Should have come sooner. Should have come sooner. We have three children and they've needed cradling when I couldn't cradle them. But I wrote them a poem once about that. Because I wanted them to know when the time came to drink the cup of sorrows, they needed to remember who was holding it to their lips. Dear child, this cup of sorrows must be drunk. It is for thee. But be sure he holds the goblet, little child, 'tis he. Hurting ones, here's your father. Saw his son upon the cross, knows so well your pain and parting, knows so well your loss. Bruised you'll be, but never broken. Dim the flax burns in the storm. He will strengthen you with power. He will lead you home. When I have no strength to lift them, hold them close against thy breast. Care and carry, calm and comfort, Lord, at my behest. Comforter of Israel, hold them. Hold my child close to thee. Father, hear this mother's heartbeat. Cradle them for me. Cradle them for me. Cradle them for me. Father, hear this mother's heartbeat. Cradle them for me. Prayer puts your child into the arms of God. Do you realize that? To do what you can never do. Because mothers cannot kiss every hurt better. So what can mothers do? No, you're not a perfect mom, but God's a perfect God. He will perfect you and your children if you ask him to. Know that you cannot clean them up on the inside, but God can. Know that you need to be born again so that you can lead your child to Christ. Know that he loves and knows your child far better. He died for them. You haven't died for your child. He did. That's how much he loves them. And he lives for them. And know that in prayer you can put your child into the arms of God. And he'll hold them close, as that wonderful song told us, by the power of his love. Now, will you pray with me? Oh, search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any sinful, offensive way in me, something that's offended you, Father, and lead me in the way everlasting. Maybe some of you would wish to, first of all, ask the Lord to bring life, spiritual life, into your heart. Maybe you're religious. Maybe you go to church. Well, Nicodemus was too. And yet Jesus said, flesh gives birth to flesh, spirit to spirit. Just ask him, Lord, I need to be born again. I need your spirit to invade my life, forgive my sin. Take up residence in my heart. Counter the bias of sin within me that I was born with. Be my Savior. You can do that just where you're sitting now. Just pray to him.